Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel, we are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, welcome everyone.
Who's talking Star Trek from the
holodeck? How did that happen?
I don't know what's going on with this board lately.
That was awesome.
It was another show playing.
I was like going, wait a minute, how is Mike talking without even moving his lips?
Magic. We're in the holodeck, David. You should know this. Computer in program. I forgot the in the program before starting this show, David. Computer in program and delete. At least it wasn't like a porno. Like, oh my God, what is this?
Why are you naked, Mike? And why is 7 of 9 like dressed that way?
Computer in program and delete to Paul 7 of 9 scissoring scene immediately. But not really. Save it.
Save it.
In a secret file. Yeah. All right. So welcome everyone to Star Trek from the Holodeck. I am Michael Flores, your host and pervert, apparently. And David Ensign of the USS Rain Man Digital. Hello, David.
Just don't look into the file that says Guinan for me, okay?
Is that your holodeck program?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, if the holodeck was real, it would be just used for porno. You know that. Oh, no one would go on adventures. Yeah, we'd be going on adventures into pussy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Anyone who says they would not use the holodeck for sex is lying.
A liar.
Absolutely.
Even the ladies would. They'd be like, you know what? I like my husband. I love him. But if his penis was a little bigger, like computer, you know, create my husband, get rid of his gut, keep his face. I love him. I love the way he looks. Also add 7 inches to his dick, please. Like everyone would take advantage of it. And there's nothing wrong with that.
They would probably look at their husband and say, take off his head and put it on Jason Momoa.
Oh, wow.
There you go. Because everyone just needs to be honest with themselves.
Well, if they do that, then they're also going to take off the safety protocols as well. Like, oh, please, I want to be hurt. All right. Welcome, everyone. Let's get back on track. I want to welcome everyone to the show. Today, you and I, Dave, will be discussing and breaking down the highly anticipated Star Trek Deep Space Nine comic book issue number 1, titled Too Long a Sacrifice. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Too Long a Sacrifice is a 4-issue miniseries from IDW Publishing. The series is written by Scott and David Tipton with art from Greg Scott. The miniseries is IDW's second Star Trek Deep Space Nine release following Star Trek Deep Space Nine Fool's Gold, which I believe, Dave, was back in 2009.
Yes, this is highly anticipated for a lot of hardcore Star Trek fans of the comic because it's the Tiptons returning back to Deep Space Nine.
Can you believe we have not received a Deep Space Nine comic book in over 10 years?
It's amazing, isn't it?
What the fuck is that about? How the hell, Dave, do you manage to ignore one of the most beloved Trek series retrospectively? Because let's be honest, a lot of people hated on it back in the day. But retrospectively, it has garnered a lot of love, and yet for some reason they continue to shit on it.
Yeah, because
10 years, David.
10 years, and the way that Deep Space Nine ended, you could have easily continued it.
Yeah,
in a comic,
just like they're doing with Star Trek Year 5. Give us Deep Space Nine Year 8.
Can you imagine if they did a Deep Space Nine comic similar to Year 5?
Oh man.
Have been really gushing over Year 5.
Year 5 is some of the best Star Trek we've ever been given, period.
Period.
I don't care if it's in the form of a comic book.
And you would take that type of writing, take that type of care that they placed on a comic book series and put it in Deep Space Nine, you would see so many fans so happy.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've actually noticed this is also because me and you have watched that that really, really good documentary on Deep Space Nine.
What We Left Behind.
And after that, it really dawned on me that basically, yeah, even today, even though Star Trek fans have a lot of respect and love for Deep Space Nine, it's still treated like the redhead stepchild of all the series when it shouldn't.
Yeah.
It has some of the most dynamic characters in all of Star Trek, has one of the most interesting storylines that never got finished.
Yeah. It's a shame.
It's a shame.
But that's why when we get opportunities like this, a comic book series, we get excited. All right, so the synopsis. Return to DS9 as Death casts its shadow on the space station in this murder mystery graphic novel. Constable Odo searches for truth amid a web of treachery and lies. But everyone on the promenade has a motive for this murder, be it vengeance, justice, or old-fashioned greed. I love that synopsis, Dave.
Oh, yeah, because especially with Deep Space Nine, the Odo stories are some of my favorite. Because it's film noir at its most basic, you know?
At its best, Dave.
At its best.
Yeah.
Sorry, not basic, but best.
Yeah.
And, like, you don't see that type of storytelling. Yes, we have procedural, like, cop dramas and everything. Mm-hmm. But there's something about, you know, the really... really film noir detective going around asking witnesses, getting his information. There's not very much action, but there's actually, you see, like,
well, Odo fits that archetype too.
Yeah.
because in the old detective film noirs, you get this relentless detective that will do anything to get his man. And Odo is fucking relentless.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't care.
That's how his character was always developed in the show. Just looking at Deep Space Nine as a whole, as an entire piece, it is essentially a space noir.
Yes.
So thank you, writers Scott and David Tipton, for doing that for us.
It's amazing.
Not just saying, hey, guys, this is a film noir piece, so we're going to tell you it's a noir piece. No, give it to us in the writing. Give it to us within the art, and they deliver just that.
Oh, yeah, because, like, the Tiptons, in this one, they actually get a lot of the characteristics and the voices down pat of all the characters.
I know.
I mean, like, the opening segments with Garrick and Bashir, I forgot how much I love that relationship.
The interplay between the two of them. The
interplay between the two, because it's, like, Bashir just being very, very dry. And especially during this time, I was really impressed the fact that the Tiptons were able to get the proper period of the character, because Bashir changes throughout the entire season. And the fact that they put this smack dab towards the
tail end
of the Dominion War, Bashir is burnt out by this point.
Well, they did their research.
And, like, especially during this time, Garrick is really Bashir's best friend. He's constantly talking to him.
And if you ask some circles, his lover.
His lover. But, dude, I thought it was so awesome that they got their dialogue right. Like, normally, if I were to look at this comic and see so much dialogue, it would be a negative, right? But because of the style that it is, it's a detective noir piece.
It works.
It's a procedural. It's a character... character-driven story.
Don't you like that Odo's log was basically the film noir voiceover?
Oh my god, yeah, dude.
It's late at night, and I've been searching.
Well, dude, the fact that the first one that he comes up with is, I'll read it right here, investigator's notes. Incident occurred on stardate 51636.5.
Don't you hear the saxophone playing in the background and the typewriter typing?
11 a.m.
Yeah.
Station time.
So good.
At dining establishment, Lavin's Eatery, a restaurant that has been in operation for several years here aboard DS9. You hear the film noir.
Dude, it's good.
It just oozes out of it. And the thing that I really liked was the Tiptons decided to make this an Odo story.
Smart move.
Because if they chose a different character, I don't think... it would work.
No, if you can't have him You can't have a murder mystery without including Odo, or at least having him be the lead. I agree.
And like at first when I thought about seeing this, I was like, everyone's going to get like mixed in together. We're going to get a very convoluted story because
no, they found their places.
They found their places. Yeah. I mean, even down to Worf. The scene with Worf was actually really cool because
well, how many times did we see when Worf was originally introduced into the Deep Space Nine crew? How many times did we see him stick his nose into security business?
Security business. And on top of that, not just stick his nose in security business, but show Worf as that very during that deep, the thing I liked that what they emphasized in Deep Space Nine with Worf was being Klingon. They brought out the bigoted side,
the prejudice side
for sure. Of being Klingon,
mm-hmm.
and like the way he looks at everyone. If you go back and you watch Worf in TNG compared to Worf in Deep Space Nine, Worf in Deep Space Nine is a more complex character.
Oh yeah, because, without a doubt. But don't let the TNG fans hear you say that.
Yeah. Because
like, but it's true.
It's really true because like when you get to this specifically in this scene when he's talking about like the other alien race and he automatically calls them well they're untrustable they're blah 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 they're barbaric and everything and it's like wow the Tiptons really know Worf in Deep Space Nine they're not giving the character voice from TNG
and how interesting is that Dave that the Tiptons managed to do all this because. We were both a little hesitant when this was announced. Now, we were super excited because it's Deep Space Nine, and there's just not enough Deep Space Nine, period. Novel-wise, comic book-wise, you name it, and we just don't get enough of Deep Space Nine. We get a lot of original series. We get a lot of TNG. But Deep Space Nine, as I had said at the top of the show, is just neglected. So when they announced this, we were excited. And I don't want to bash the Tiptons, but I feel like if you listen to our shows regularly, you know that we have a rocky relationship.
Yes, we do.
With the Tiptons. And that's sad to say because they are the kind of the go-to writers for Star Trek over the last, 10 years?
Yes.
But their stories, in my humble opinion, are a little hit or miss.
They are because, like, listen, I understand that the Tiptons are everywhere when it comes to writing for Star Trek.
They really are.
You know, I mean, they're writing TOS, they're writing TNG.
Okay, so they wrote recently Star Trek Mirror Broken. And not good.
It's not good.
Star Trek The Q Conflict. Horrible. Horrible. Probably, and I don't want to be negative, but it's probably the worst comic Star Trek. I'll just say Star Trek. I won't be so hyperbolic here. Probably the worst Star Trek comic book I've ever read.
I'm with you there just because of the failed premise.
It was just David, thank you. The failed premise. Exactly. So I was a little hesitant when it was announced that they would be attached, especially because you and I are just gushing month after month over Star Trek Year 5, which is led by a completely different writing team. And it's some of the best Star Trek, period, whether you're talking about movies, TV shows or comics or books. It's one of the best iterations of Star Trek we have ever been given.
Mm-hmm.
So we were hesitant. But luckily, this first issue has managed to deliver in a way that we did not expect. And on top of that, we're getting the art from Greg Scott, who worked on Gotham Central and the ongoing X-Files series.
Yes.
So I feel like as of issue one, we're in good hands, especially Dave. You have to remember that we may be skeptical at times of David and Scott Tipton if they're capable of handling a Star Trek story, but they are the ones who also, because we like to be fair on this show, they're also the ones who adapted Harlan Ellison's The City on the Edge of Forever.
Yes.
And that remains one of my favorite Star Trek comic books of all time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, me and you reviewed it.
Jesus, dude, that
comic was beautiful.
That story had me at times tearing up. It was so fucking good. And I don't think I've ever got tears in my eyes from any comic book ever in my life.
Yeah. And I get that basically it's a really good time to be a Star Trek comic book fan because we have great pieces of comic book to read.
Right.
Now.
Yeah.
And Year five is phenomenal. We already have discussed about that multiple times on a lot of the past issues on it. And I'm looking over at IDW with the Tiptons. And I'm like going, you got to step up your game.
Well, this is them stepping
up,
Dave.
This
is them stepping up. And also, again, Greg Scott, they also picked an artist that we can get behind. We're not big fans of Woodard, I believe is how you say his name. He's the one that does a lot of the art for the Tiptons, and we're not big fans of that. No. So I'm happy that they brought on Greg Scott. He's a comic book artist that works with both pencils and inks. And get this, it kind of is very, it's fitting for him to have returned to Star Trek, because his industry credits started with Marvel Comics, with the Marvel Comics Star Trek line, which included Deep Space Nine, issue number 15 from Marvel Comics, Requiem in Obsidian, and Star Trek Unlimited number 9, Trekkers. That's where he started.
Yeah.
So it's only fitting that he returns. And he returns with a vengeance, Dave, because his style of art fits so fucking well with Deep Space Nine. High contrast, drop-offs into black. You get that simulation of negative fill, that look that's very much a part of the noir films.
Yeah.
And then you get the colorist, Felipe Sobrero, I believe is how you say his name, who is equally as good, and his color palette choices was great. There's a two-page sequence, and you probably know what I'm going to talk about already. There's a two-page sequence right at the beginning that captures the, essentially, the element that kickstarts the plot, and it's the explosion. It's the element that Odo investigates. That two-page explosion is fantastic.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of action going on. In fact, usually, or typically, I complain about writers or artists that use up 2-3 pages to show an action sequence. I'm like, ugh, fuck, you're just wasting time here. What are you doing? But the way they captured that explosion, the art and the color just works in such a way that you feel the heat of the explosion. You feel the sheer annihilation. Because you're supposed to. It's the catalyst that kicks off the entire investigation. You're dealing with 8 murders. Not deaths, murders.
Yeah.
So the fact that they dedicate 2 pages to that scene, I feel like is very appropriate.
Well, also, it for me, with those first 2 pages, it really gave a feel of we're watching an episode of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
Because, like, Deep Space Nine usually, I used to remember back in the day.
You used to remember, or you do remember?
I do remember. Sorry. I do remember, like, back in the day, watching the episodes of Star Trek, you'd have like these 2-minute beginnings that set up the story.
The teasers.
The teasers that just basically, whether it's someone walking in the promenade and suddenly, bang, sniper shot, he's lying dead on the ground, and all of a sudden it fades to black. And then we go into credits, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really like the fact that we have the explosion, and then it cuts right to Odo talking, right? But my Star Trek brain was like going, right after the explosion, I just pictured fade to black, and then you have the Deep Space Nine title.
Oh, yeah.
Title just go on, and then it just cuts to Odo talking.
Well, that goes right back to what you had said earlier in the discussion, that the Tiptons just managed to capture Deep Space Nine in comic book form in a way that I honestly, Dave, I've never seen. They captured the vibe, the aesthetic, the mood, the tone, everything. And we're talking about 32 pages.
Yeah.
32 pages.
That is in itself is really impressive, especially coming from them where I don't want to say I don't want to harp on them from their past work that we covered, but this actually feels like they gave some thought to it.
They did research,
Dave. They did research.
They didn't just get comfortable and fat because they've been handling comic books for, or comic Star Trek comic books for 10 plus years.
10 plus years. And like,
they're like, shit, that year five is really showing us up, bro. We better fucking up our game. Let's binge watch the seven seasons of Deep Space Nine before we write this, right? Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Doesn't it feel like that, though? It feels like Deep Space Nine is fresh on their minds.
Yes, especially with this, because like, just in this first issue, you feel like this belongs inside one of the seasons of Deep Space Nine.
Well, Dave, I think the number one hurdle is capturing the voices of our characters. When you're dealing with a tie-in media like this, that's something you have to do because you're dealing with essentially iconic characters. And as you mentioned, the voices of Garrick and Bashir specifically. And yes, I agree with that. But it wasn't just their voices. The reason why I feel like this is a win for the Tiptons is because they captured the voices of the entire DS9 crew, as well as the ambiance of the show. The attention to detail, the choice words, their syntax and specific vernacular, it was just spot on. It's as if they studied every single one of our DS9 crew members and then analyzed it for days. I could hear these characters talking. That's how well they captured the voice.
Yeah, not just the character themselves, but down to the actors. Down to the actors. I mean, like,
yeah, the nuances of their performance, the way they emote.
You know, like, where I really noticed that was Sisko scenes. Basically because, A, number one, Sisko, amazing actor.
Powerful.
Really gives a lot of emotion to his thing, but to his performance.
To his thing. He gives a lot of emotion to his penis? Is that what you're talking about?
I was about to say, probably not the right word to say.
He brings a lot of emotion to his penis.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Some of the scenes, especially when he's talking with the restaurant owner, I'm like going, they're copying even like the little mannerisms that you would see in Sisko. You know, the eye twitch, the way he would talk to people. If he's getting really personal, he'll get really, really freaking close up to their face.
Well, the artist also did great with capturing their mannerisms.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Dude, it's crazy.
And it really does feel like I'm watching a episode of Deep Space Nine. And that really runs into parallel, like with our pluses of year five.
Mm-hmm.
Year five feels like it should be a TV show. Here
feels like an episode.
It feels like an episode, a lost episode of Deep Space Nine. And now that's a lot of praise after just one issue.
But I think it deserves it. I mean, that first issue really kicked things off.
I really, really hope that the Tiptons continue on on this good train.
I can't imagine that. I mean, just look at how, well, then again, Q conflict. Issue number one was really strong,
yes,
wasn't it?
And if you look at Q Conflict, look at Broken Mirror. Yeah. Really great start.
Yeah, you're right. You know what, really, Dave? I'm going to be optimistic though, Dave, and I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for another City on the Edge of Forever.
I am too. I'm really hoping that basically we see some really stellar work, especially with the storyline, because they were able to get to the very end and keep me wanting to see more. When they brought in Quark, I loved how they treated Quark in the comic, because this is how if this issue were to really happen in the season of Deep Space Nine, this is how Quark is actually treated.
Well, it's also how the character is used.
It's how he's used.
And that's something you and I complain about a lot in a lot of different franchises, but let's keep it, you know, on Star Trek.
Yes.
It's something I think we talked about recently where I don't remember what show it was. It might've been a Patreon show, but we had talked about that. It was the Kelvin timeline movie, which we're okay with for the most part. Into Darkness was a bit of a miss, but it bounced back. But we felt like they used characters that weren't necessarily because that's how the character would have been used. And let's say the original series, why they were created. It was like, hey, we have an all-star cast. let's use this character for no reason at this moment.
Yes.
Because it wasn't necessarily written to be Star Trek. It was written to be a blockbuster tentpole film. So you had certain characters that needed to fit into certain archetypes, right?
Yes.
Well, with this here in the Deep Space Nine comic, you have characters that are being used in the positions that they were designed to be used in.
Because when you get to the very end, dude, you cannot tell me that basically that last page of Odo sitting in his office, Quark enters from behind him.
Oh, what is this, the gay porno? Oh, Dave?
Not entering that way.
You gotta watch your choice words tonight.
But Quark enters the room and basically they have the usual banter. Mm. And then Odo turns around and accuses Quark of actually causing the explosion. And all of a sudden you cut to a close-up of Quark's face like, what the hell? And then you cannot tell me you expected all of a sudden fade out, just like in the Deep Space Nine episode.
It was good.
It was good.
And on top of all of that, we get a story that takes place between sometime during the series, I believe, sixth season, when the Dominion War was at its peak, right?
Yes. Yeah, because especially you see it really nicely shown through the character of Bashir.
Yeah. So you get a story that's essentially at the peak of the Dominion War, and they use this as a backdrop to delve into a smaller, more nuanced story written as a mystery, bringing it back to the genre of this comic. Because of the serialized nature of DS9, there are certain things that must always be included. For example, if you're dealing with Next Generation, let's say you want to write a comic book within the era of Next Generation. At any point, you can just say, all right, I'm going to pick, you know, a story. And it really doesn't matter what year it takes place within the year, within the run of TNG. Because unless you're dealing with a Locutus story or a Borg story, because for the most part, they're episodic and you're not really beheld to any continuity necessarily, right? Narrative continuity.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, you can kind of pick whatever. I'm like, I want to write a TNG story about Picard going to a planet and getting lost. And you can make it work just fine. With Deep Space Nine, there are things you need to know about the entire season run. There are certain things that must always be included. For one, the high stakes of the war, especially towards the tail end of DS9. Section 31, walking from the shadows. So using what we know of DS9 at this time, we get a story sculpted from that, taking those raw ingredients and forming a classic mystery story involving Constable Odo. It's a great setup. It feels true to the classic murder mysteries, which I'm a huge fan of. I love film noir and the classic murder mysteries. You have the expected lot of cast members that fill those needed cliches as well that comes within that genre. You get the whole who did it vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You have your cast of who did it suspects, Nosigans, Quark, just to name a few. I'm very curious to see where it goes.
Oh, yeah, because like especially the way that the Tiptons chose this specific time frame for DS9.
Mm-hmm.
It's a time when no one trusts anybody now. A
lot of suspicion.
There's a lot of suspicion because that's why one of the very telling things about this issue, while I love the parts of Odo, it's the what really helped me go through the story as a Star Trek fan was the stuff with Bashir, because you could actually tell, okay, this is during the time when Bashir
taking a toll on him.
It's taken such a big toll that he doesn't trust anybody. And like the moment when they ask him about Garak and he's like going, well, with Garak, I never know with Garak. And it's like, this is during a time when no one trusts anybody. You can. And
yeah,
that's the perfect.
It's a very Cold War vibe.
Yeah. And it's a perfect setting for a film noir detective story for Odo.
Yeah. So a little bit of backstory I have here on the creation of this specific comic book. So the title came from a poem by Yeats. Too long a sacrifice can make a stone of the heart. Right there wins me.
because that's so Star Trek.
Absolutely. A stardate given in the first issue places the series in the sixth season between One Little Ship and Honor Among Thieves. Also, the Tiptons had earlier written Fool's Gold. Scott Tipton commented, "We're so excited to return to the world of Star Trek Deep Space Nine with its frontier setting and precarious place in the galaxy. Deep Space Nine offers the opportunity to tell truly unique tales of intrigue and suspense." The editor, Chase Martez, commented, "Deep Space Nine is one of the Star Trek series that I've been the most eager for IDW to dive into in comics form. So to be at the helm for the first series in over a decade," which I don't understand that.
it just goes to like what we were talking about earlier about how like this is a time when we need a Deep Space Nine comic.
I just don't understand. How did we go 10 years, David, without Deep Space Nine? If this doesn't back up the entire reason why they created the Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind, then I don't know what is.
Yeah.
I mean, the entire documentary had a lot to do with the fact that they were the redheaded stepchild. They were never appreciated. And here we are again. Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
David Tipton commented that the series was conceived as a story with two points of particular interest. One, a closer look at the behind-the-scenes aspect of Deep Space Nine, the ongoing underground trade and business that stays in the shadows, along with the station's darker history dating back to the Cardassian occupation of Bajor. And two, a look at how the station would handle a series of seemingly unstoppable crimes. Odo is naturally the nexus for these themes. He has a long and unique history with the station and knows it better than perhaps anyone. Odo's voice is an unusual one. He often communicates with grunts or short expressions. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we've enjoyed conveying that in this story. Often in Star Trek, it's the outsider characters who are the most popular. Yes. Right. Be it Spock or Data, or in the case of Deep Space Nine, Constable Odo. I don't know. He is right about that, but at the same time, Deep Space Nine was one of the best series in terms of spreading the love
to other characters. Yeah.
But Deep Space, TNG, Voyager, Enterprise, they all ended up at some point gravitating to a group of characters, even the original series, which is fine. It worked.
Yeah.
You know, whatever is the most popular, you need to focus on it. You need to capitalize on that. But Deep Space Nine never really did that. They always spread the love, even to the guest spots. The guest spots became regulars, and they had their own stories as well.
Yeah. But again, that's what makes Deep Space Nine really unique for a Star Trek series, because you have so many of these different stories going on. But when you tune in and you see certain elements, you know that basically, this episode's going to focus on this character.
Yeah.
You know, if I do see like crime elements or like procedural elements, I know it's going to be an Odo episode. If I know it's more delving into religious aspects, more social, I don't want to say soapboxing, but social writing,
social politics.
Thank you. Then you know it's going to be a Sisko episode.
Or possibly a Major Kira.
And, you know, you could even delve into maybe even like a, it's probably going to be like a Cardassian episode.
Right.
So I like the fact that, of course, we've always known that the Tiptons do understand Star Trek. They do.
No, that's not in question.
There's no in question there. I am very comfortable with this series because they understand at least one element of Deep Space Nine, which is the connection of Odo. Odo is one of those characters, like I understand what you're saying, where it's like he's not the sole reason. He's not the sole, you know, outsider character. There's other outsider characters in the series, but he is one of the best. He is one of the best.
For sure.
And when you're dealing with like this type of storytelling with a film noir, there's not really another character out there that I could say who would be a good fit for this type of storytelling. There's not met there. There isn't any.
Yeah.
There isn't any other character.
That no, there actually, isn't.
You can make the focus.
Yeah, I agree. So, Dave, this does bring us to an end in our discussion on Star Trek Deep Space. Oh, you know what? We need to talk about variant covers.
Yes.
There was four of them. Huh? Now, they're not nearly as great as the Year 5 variants.
No.
But they're still pretty fun.
They're well done.
IDW always delivers some really good variant covers for Star Trek. There are four of them. And good luck finding
any of them. Any of them.
Because just like every Star Trek comic book that's put out, if you don't get it on day one, you're not going to get it. Especially one of those nice, snazzy variants. It's just not going to happen.
No. Although the one variant that I do like is like the poster that is done like a 1950s movie poster.
Oh, yeah.
That says Deep Space Nine, Too Long a Sacrifice.
Yeah.
And it's Odo walking away from an explosion with Sisko in the background.
What's your favorite variant, you think, out of the four? And we'll post these on our, when the discussion goes on demand, we'll post it on the show discussion on the site.
I like the film noir movie poster because that's it. It's one of those things that just touches on one of the things I really love about comic book variants lately is this connection of actually making the comic feel like it's a movie or a television show.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's like me and you have gushed in a lot of our DC shows about like Deceased, some of the covers there where they take elements from a movie poster and add it to the cover and it just blows your mind. Here, the thing I really, really like about that is they chose this not just because it looks fantastic as a movie poster, but also because it fits the style of the narrative that they're giving.
Yeah.
You know, we are going to be reading a noir detective story. And, you know, not to gush any further, but if you've seen the variant for issue number 2, they continue that element and it looks freaking cool.
Okay, so this is one of those rare cases where I actually prefer the main retail cover. Now, the one you're talking about is retail incentive cover A.
Yes.
But I actually prefer the regular cover, and because there's some symbolism going on, Dave, tell me if I'm crazy, okay? But the one that you have the regular cover, correct? The one that you purchased?
Yes.
Okay. Look at it briefly without over-staring, without over-analyzing. Don't stare too deep.
Okay.
Odo's face and his hands, the way they're positioned, comes off as a magnifying glass. Do you see that?
I see that. Yes, I do.
Isn't that fucking crazy?
That is really, really cool.
That is not a coincidence.
Yeah.
There are various moments where, and I didn't pick up on it right away. It's when I was preparing for the show. And, you know, when you're briefly looking at the issue. And I'm not staring at the issue. I'm just kind of glancing at it. And in my mind, I keep getting the impression, this vague impression that a magnifying glass is on the cover. So I then analyze the cover and I realize that it's shaped to look like a fucking magnifying glass, which is the logo of many detectives.
Yes, it is.
It's fucking smart, dude.
It is pretty damn smart. I will give you that. The
I thought I was going crazy. I'm like, am I overanalyzing? Right. It looks like a magnifying glass.
It looks like a magnifying glass because he's holding it
the way his hand is positioned. Yeah.
And the way Odo's natural facial features work.
Yep.
It looks like a slim magnifying glass.
Yeah.
Which is freaking cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, all right, this does bring us to the end of our discussion. Dave, why don't you give me your brief final thoughts, because we've already gone way over time.
Brief final thoughts on...
And your RMD score.
I'm going to first say that I'm really excited for this comic. It's got, it hit me in all the really good feels. I'm still a little hesitant. I'm a little gun shy because the last couple of titles I've read about that have been brought to the table by the Tiptons have not been good.
Oh, but come on.
When you start off really on a nice pace with this one.
Sometimes you just need a nice pace.
Yeah.
A little bit of back and forth, a little push, give.
You know, you gotta get right in there.
Yeah. push that ass up, girl.
So, like, I'm really excited for issue two. I'm going to definitely buy it. And
well, good luck, Dave. If you haven't bought it yet, good luck.
Oh, I have my ways. I have my
Can
ways.
You please get me one? Because I went to go order it, and it's already sold out.
Like Quark, I have my contacts.
Yeah, can you sneak one into the studio, please? Studio.
It'll be on one of my shipments.
All right, so what's your score?
My score on this one is probably going to surprise people because of how high it is.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm going to give this a 95.
Wow, David. Yeah. You really are all about it.
Because I really dig the story, and I'm really impressed with the art. The art is fantastic. I love the styling. They fit everything. They got all the characters' voices. I couldn't find anything negative.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything negative. But is it worthy of, like, saying 100? I don't know if I could do that.
Ah, come on. That's...
But
that's
I will,
rare.
But 95 is a really good
The city on it, on the edge of forever.
Exactly.
Then yes.
That's 100.
Oh, easily.
Easily 100. Is it in there?
No.
No.
And that's, it's funny you bring that up, Dave, because that's how I came up with my rating. I thought about the very best Star Trek comic book I've read recently. And The City on the Edge of Forever is a 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Is it as good as that? No, not even close. Is this a good comic book read? Absolutely. Is it a good Star Trek read? Absolutely. Is it a fantastic space noir? Absolutely. Did the Tiptons do a fantastic job? And did they manage to capture the voices and the ambience of Star Trek Deep Space Nine? Yes. Is the story interesting? Yes. Piqued my interest. So I am giving this an 85% on the RMD score. Fantastic first start. And I am anxious to see how they continue the story. But I am still optimistically hesitant.
Yes.
Because we all know how the Q conflict ended.
Q conflict and Broken Mirror.
Yeah.
That hurts your reputation.
But I will say that looking at Q conflict, they did not capture the crew of the Deep Space Nine crew, the Voyager crew, the TNG crew. Q,
who's it
in
about?
The terms of voice, not even remotely as close as they did here in this issue. So they had an agenda, Dave. They wanted to do right by the Deep Space Nine fans. And I will say, so far in issue one, they have done that. All right. So this does conclude our discussion. I want to thank everyone for listening. And please don't forget to click those links, share, share, share. And if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe, like, share, watch once, twice, three times. Help us out. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.